and to get back to a political solution.
Israeli tanks massed just south of the Lebanese border with an invasion tonight said to be imminent. It follows another day of aerial attacks on Hezbollah targets. And back here, UK leaders like David Lammy, who you just heard, demand an immediate ceasefire. But frankly, they may as well be shouting into the wind, because this is an escalation that they have been warning Israel against for months. And yet, you might ask, what choice does that country have? Can it really afford to leave Hezbollah in place, firing missile after missile at its civilians? Or is this not just a just war, but arguably a necessary one?
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Lebanese media is reporting heavy artillery fire near towns along its southern border with Israel. It's after Benjamin Netanyahu's defense minister said the next stage in the war against Hezbollah will begin soon. Richard Pater is the director of BICOM, which produces research and analysis about Israel and the Middle East. He's been telling LBC we're probably looking at a limited incursion.
I think the focus will be primarily on the underground facilities that are in the villages kind of adjacent to the Israeli borders, villages that Hezbollah have turned into strongholds of military positions. And to be able to guarantee Israeli population safe return to the north, then these facilities, this military infrastructure, need to be dealt with.
Israel's military has issued evacuation orders for several areas in the south of Beirut, but a spokesperson has failed to confirm or deny any incursion into Lebanon. The Lebanese economy and trade minister, Hamin Salam, says his country is still focusing on diplomatic efforts to avoid an all-out war.
Once there's a ground war invasion, we are mostly fearful that there will be a clash, and that clash might lead to further escalation, further bombing. So that is where we are putting all our efforts now. However, things seem to be a little out of control on the border.
An independent report into a second potential IT scandal at the post office has found it's likely different software caused accounting shortfalls. It concerns an older system which operated before the Horizon program was introduced. LBC's David Dom reports.
Capture, it's known as, was rolled out across branches in 1993. At least 40 sub-postmasters claim they were falsely accused of stealing because of glitches in this particular technology. Now, this report concluded that it was a reasonable likelihood that Capture would have created shortfalls.
The post office has been ordered to investigate claims relating to Capture. President Biden says damage from Hurricane Helene now stretches across 10 states, with more than 100 people left dead. Around 600 others remain missing. And a 96-year-old woman's been given a suspended jail term for causing death by dangerous driving. June Mills was in charge of a car which mounted a pavement on Merseyside last year, killing a 76-year-old. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 50 points at 82.70. The pound will buy $1.33 and €1.19. LBC weather staying wet and windy for the east of England overnight, but drier with clear spells elsewhere and a low of 3 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Tim Daly.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
Just gone 10. Hello. Very good evening to you. Ben Kentish here with you until 1 on LBC. Great to have your company tonight. Coming up,
I would knock on doors and you'd see somebody at the door who says, oh, I can't speak to you, I will get my husband. I don't think that's as equally valid as our culture.
Kemi Badenoch says that when it comes to immigration, it's time to accept that not all cultures are equally valid. She suggests that people who hate Israel shouldn't be allowed into the UK. Has the Tory leadership candidate got a point, or is this just the dog whistle racism that she's been accused of today? We'll discuss, and
millions of us are feeling this deep and personal and almost familial sense of loss. Perhaps it's partly that she's always been there, a changeless human reference point.
Boris Johnson reveals what illness the late Queen was suffering with before she died. But has the Prime Minister betrayed Her Majesty's confidence to help sell his new book? Details to come.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
But But we start tonight with what is happening as we speak on the border between Israel and Lebanon to its north. Just to the south of that border, Israeli tanks have been massing for some hours ahead of an incursion or an invasion that is reported, according to US intelligence sources quoted in the media tonight, to be imminent. Reports suggest that artillery fire is already being exchanged ahead of what appears to be the latest front of Israel's war against the terror groups, Hezbollah and Hamas, that pose such a threat to its existence and its civilians. Back here in the last couple of hours, David Lammy, the Foreign Secretary, has been speaking.
We've both seen the reports in the media about a next phase for Israel in Lebanon. We both agreed the position that we had at the UN last week, that the best way forward is an immediate ceasefire and to get back to a political solution.
And that's what they've been saying for months and months now. There needs to be an immediate ceasefire. Further violence cannot achieve what Israel wants to achieve and so on. And frankly, they might as well be shouting into the wind because their warnings, their pleas, their demands have all been ignored. And yet, isn't it the case, or is it the case in your view, that actually this war is just? It is justified that Hezbollah has long, like Hamas, has long posed a threat to Israel, to Israel's existence, to the Israeli people in the north of that country's ability to simply live peacefully and safely in their homes, rather than having to constantly seek shelter in bomb refuges? Because you might well argue that this war is not just, but actually necessary, that Israel simply cannot be expected to tolerate the ongoing existence of Hezbollah and the threat it faces. Now, I've been very critical at times of what Israel has been doing in Gaza and the way it's conducted that operation. But in relation specifically to Lebanon and Hezbollah, I don't currently, that might change, I don't currently have the same concerns. I'm worried about what the end game is, for sure. I'm worried about whether this does achieve what Israel says it will. But as for trying to take out and trying to dismantle Hezbollah and the threat that it poses, not just to Israel, but to the wider region, I think that is a very just endeavour. And you might well argue, actually, that it's overdue, that it needed to happen. A lot of you will disagree with that. Is this a just war? Is this a necessary war? And is the UK right to be demanding that Israel stop it rather than supporting Israel in enacting it? Give me a ring. 0345 6060 973. You can WhatsApp the same number or text 84850. Want to come to your thoughts. I'm really interested in your thoughts on this. It's a difficult one. I'm not saying I've got it completely right on this, because there are people that will be worried about the end game and whether, frankly, Israel has thought about it and has got one. But for the, in terms of the morality, in terms of the justice, the validity of Israel trying to dismantle Hezbollah in the way it seems to have done reasonably successful a job of already in the last week or so, is that not the same as Britain and America trying to dismantle the likes of Al-Qaeda and ISIS when they showed that they posed a threat to our civilians and our way of life? Are we really in a place to turn around and now say to another country dealing with violent Islamist terrorism, no, I'm sorry, we went to war with the terror groups threatening our civilians, but you must now not do the same? Is there a difference? Is Israel getting this one wrong again? That number once more, 0345 6060 973. I want to kick off our conversation tonight with a man who I'm delighted has joined me in the studio and very pleased to be able to speak to tonight. Adam Ma'anit is a British-Israeli campaigner for the hostages whose cousin, Tzachi Idan, was taken hostage by Hamas on the 7th of October and is still in captivity. Adam, I know another member of your family was sadly brutally killed by Hamas on the 7th of October. So for you, like so many, this is a very, very personal story. We'll come on to the situation in Lebanon. I want to talk to you more about the Israeli government stance on this in just a moment. But the obvious question, I think, to start with is about Tzachi. What do you know, if anything, what have you been told about him, his situation, and how he is?
Well, we don't know anything. As UN Secretary General Guterres just recently condemned Hamas for not allowing the Red Cross to visit the hostages. They've never been visited by any kind of neutral party as required under the Geneva Convention, so we don't actually have any kind of independent verification of their welfare. The only time we've ever had any kind of news about Tzahi was when Hamas sent us a psychological warfare kind of video where they were basically taunting us with his video, and they treated it like a game show. They said, they made him say some things, and then at the end they left it open as a question. Is he alive or is he dead? And they left a big red question mark and the characteristic inverted red triangle that is now ubiquitous on the streets of London and elsewhere, representing Hamas's sort of propaganda branding. They never answered the question, so we're left with that open-ended question of is he alive or is he dead?
And the Israeli authorities have not been able to give you any...
They've not confirmed that he's dead, so we are presuming he's still alive.
You presume he's still alive. How far do you worry, how much do you worry, Adam, that the plight of the hostages is sort of being increasingly sidelined and marginalised from the conversation about tensions in the Middle East, now the war with Lebanon and so on? I mean, it's so important, isn't it, that their plight remains central to this in a way that, I don't know, is that happening enough?
Well, clearly not. I mean, it's one thing, in the beginning, the first few weeks, it was really, it felt like it was on the top of the news agenda. It felt like many of the hostage families were able to kind of get interviews on news channels everywhere. And then as the war progressed and the news cycle moved on, it became really difficult to hear much about the hostages. We do a lot of public campaigning in Brighton to try to raise awareness about the plight of many of the hostages who have British-connected relatives here. Mm-hmm. And what we found just talking to ordinary people on the street was that they didn't even realize there were any hostages
They didn't realize that people
at all, that hostages was still a thing.
Wow.
That they didn't realize that there were hostages in Gaza, and they certainly didn't know that there were British citizens and people with British relatives. Wow. Certainly in Gaza, and there is still a British citizen. Emily Damari is a British citizen. She's still captive in Gaza. My cousin, I'm a British Israeli. My cousin Tzahi is a hostage. There's several others, some of whom we know are dead. Nevertheless, we still want them to be returned home.
And to that end, you were meeting with Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, and David Lammy, I think the Foreign Secretary, in Downing Street today. I appreciate you might want to go into the sort of the confidential elements of that conversation, Adam, but what was the gist of it? And did you come out of it confident that the UK government is doing all it can to secure the release of people like Tzahi and the others?
My message to the government, my message to the Prime Minister is the same as my message that to everyone. I've been at the UN last week. I've been speaking to heads of state as often as I can, dignitaries and so on. And I think none of us are doing enough. I'm not doing enough. You're not doing enough. Keir Starmer's not doing enough. David Lammy's not doing enough. None of us are doing enough. And the reason we know that is because hostages aren't home.
What more practically in practice can be done?
Well, I don't think there's enough pressure being put on Hamas. We hear a lot about pressure on Israel, and I think there is a lot of pressure on Israel and the Israeli government. There's a lot of pressure from within Israel. There certainly has plenty of critics on within the Israeli society about the government's handling and prioritization. What we don't hear enough about is I'm not hearing a lot of pressure on Hamas. Are you? I mean, we know, for example, that the Politburo of Hamas are based in Doha, living in the lap of luxury. One of the men who heads up their external relations department was convicted for the bombing that killed my 16-year-old cousin in the Second Intifada in a bombing in Haifa at an Israeli Arab restaurant. He was convicted for that. He was heading up Hamas's West Bank operations at the time. And he was released in the Gilad Shalit deal, and now he lives in the lap of luxury in Doha, heading up Hamas's external operations. I get press releases from Hamas's Telegram with his face on it.
Mm-hmm. And you touched on it there. There has been a lot of pressure, clearly, on the Israeli government too. A lot of the hostage families say to the Prime Minister Netanyahu, the hostages could be home tomorrow if a deal was struck. Do you feel that your government, and yours, I say, is Israeli rather than the British element of your nationality, do you feel that enough has been done by them to bring Tzahi and the others home?
The Israeli government. No, same message. I don't think they have. I think their attention is split across several different priorities, understandably. They've certainly not been signaling the right, making the right noises. They've not certainly been giving hostage families much information. There's been a lot of really negative rhetoric about some aspects of this crisis that we're in. What I would say is that, you know, it's very difficult to surmise exactly what the plans are, and some things have to understandably be secret. Mm-hmm. For example, for hostage families, we also have to make a calculation. You know, if the more I speak about my cousin, the more I make his name well known and he's seen in the media, does that harm his chances of survival? These are the kinds of questions we've had hostage specialists who've advised us for months. I didn't speak to the media because that was the, you know, while the negotiations felt like there might be some possibility of resolution and they were feeling like they were quite a tangible thing, we were worried that if we gave too much attention to Tzahi's plight, that it might, he might be considered a high value asset and that might jeopardize his life. These are the kinds of insane calculations we have to make all the time. I can't just speak candidly all the time. And I can understand that, you know, various governments can't either. That said, I think that everybody has to also see it as an opportunity to get us all out of this crisis. The demands for ceasefire are coming at the wrong order. If we want the swiftest way to get a ceasefire, the swiftest way to start beginning to bring in more aid, to, you know, talk about a pathway towards peace and all of these other things that all of the heads of states of various people talking heads on this issue are talking about, the swiftest way to do that is to secure the release of the hostages, to bring them home.
But it seems to me, Adam, there's a sort of split between, you know, amongst the hostage families, certainly within Israel, as to whether the way to get those hostages home, which is everybody's aim, is through force, effectively, by seizing them by force from Hamas, or whether it's through diplomacy and negotiation and a ceasefire agreement. And that seems to be the split. Where are you on that? Is a ceasefire now the best way to get something?
Again, I would change the order. I think that if the international community, if the United Nations, if all of the leaders of the world united under that one singular purpose of returning the hostages, it then opens up all of the other pathways. It then allows us to, you know, establish a ceasefire. It allows us to rebuild. It allows us to bring in aid. It allows us to
repair. So you would say that's a precursor repair to a ceasefire deal?
I do, and I think that they don't. The reason why we're stuck is because we keep conditioning it. And that's what the message I had to the Prime Minister today was that please stop conditioning hostages with any other aspect that you would like to see happen.
But they're not a bargaining.
It's an unconditional request, demand to release the hostages. It should be unequivocal. At this point, they've been there nearly a year. We know that the conditions are horrible. The last six hostages who were found executed were riddled with bullet holes. They had signs of abuse, signs of torture, neglect, poor hygiene. Eden Yerushalmi, a 26-year-old young woman, was found at 36 kilograms, which is about 76, 77 pounds. Mm-hmm. She was starving to death. She should have been double that weight. We know that the hostages are not in a good way. This is a humanitarian issue, and it should be treated as a humanitarian issue, not a political issue. Hostages have been released in the past on humanitarian grounds, and we, at this point, every hostage that's been there for a year is basically a humanitarian issue. They need to be returned home. That's an inhuman torture, a war crime, and bringing them home also then again allows us to open up possibilities, new pathways for peace.
Let me just ask you finally, if I could, Adam, about what's happening as you and I speak right now in Lebanon, or at least the Lebanese border. You said you were worried about the sort of the plight of the hostages being almost sort of eroded, degraded by everything else that's going on. Is this new front in the war? Is this new sort of the stepping up of attacks on Hezbollah, this what seems to be an imminent invasion of Lebanon? I mean, that's only going to make that worse. That is not going to help the plight of the hostages, is it?
Unclear. I mean, again, I'm not a master tactician. I'm not a strategist. I'm not a, you know, politician or a military man. Could it be a ruse so that Hamas think that the IDF are distracted so that they can launch some kind of, you know, dawn raid and operation on a tunnel? Who knows? I mean, there's all sorts of things that we have to kind of, we've seen what Israel can do in the last few weeks, and mm-hmm. some of it's quite spectacular. So who knows? Maybe something else is cooking. I don't know. I also know it would be unfair to not talk about the plight of the 60,000 Israeli civilians who've had to flee their homes in northern Israel. Since October 8th, Hezbollah has been raining down rockets on the communities, civilian communities around north of Israel, and we've had to basically evacuate. I've had friends who've lived in those communities and have had to flee and are living now in Tel Aviv in hotels and so on, and the largesse of their friends. We've had Jewish children killed playing football by Hezbollah rockets. Enough is enough. I mean, we can't live like that. People, you know, we have evacuated communities in the south. We have evacuated communities in the north. We have Houthis firing ballistic missiles into central Tel Aviv. I mean, at some point, something's got to give. So I don't blame the government for trying to do something about this.
Adam, thank you very much indeed for coming in. That's Adam Manit, British-Israeli campaigner for the hostages, as you were just hearing, Adam's cousin, Tzachi Adan, taken by Hamas into Gaza on the 7th of October. Tzachi's daughter, eldest child, Mayan, just turned 18, shot dead by Hamas on that date too. Adam, thank you very much again. Indeed, Adam's saying there that this war against Hezbollah is just, that no country could tolerate 60,000 of its citizens having to flee their homes because of terrorism and rocket fire. Do you agree with that? Is this war one that is defensible, one that perhaps, in your view, is necessary? 0345 6060 973. Your calls on that to come after this.
This is LBC.
The British Airways end of summer sale has landed. Just as you're about to return to the chaos of weekday mornings. First gear for miles down the motorway. Piles of paperwork. Quick or nothing dinners. Commutes with no personal space. You deserve another break. Find thousands of flights and holidays in the British Airways end of summer sale. Subject to availability. Sale ends 1st of October. Holidays are ATOL protected. Terms and conditions apply. Visit ba.com/sale.
Nobody asks to have a lifetime of memories slowly erased. Nobody asks to have a loved one not recognize them. Nobody asks to feel lonely or confused. But today, you could change this. By leaving a gift in your will to Alzheimer's Society, you'll help fund life-changing support, vital campaigning, and groundbreaking research to tackle Britain's biggest killer. Discover the impact your gift can make. Search Alzheimer's Society Wills.
Did you know you could get the winter fuel payment or the equivalent in Scotland if you get pension credit? Pension credit is worth, on average, £3,900 per year and gives you help with other living costs. It's for people aged 66 or over and on a low income. Check the online eligibility calculator today to see if you're entitled. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 991234. Eligibility criteria apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
To the time, let's come straight to your calls about whether Israel's imminent, not my words, but those apparently of the US intelligence community, imminent invasion or incursion into Lebanon designed to at least push back Hezbollah, if not eradicate it completely, is justified. Is that something you support? And is it something that you think Britain's government should support? Because it's not supporting it right now. David Lammy tonight saying, no, we need a ceasefire. Diplomacy is the way that you deal with Hezbollah, not through force. How much do you agree? Let's talk to John in Hackney about that. Hi, John.
Hello there. Thanks for my call. I feel so sorry for the hostages still being kept. I can't imagine. But Mr. Netanyahu, he's got a balancing job on his hand. But I reckon right now he's doing the very best that he can to get these hostages back.
Do you, John? Because I'm sceptical of that, to be honest.
But he's got to balance this with the survival of the country and the lives of thousands. How many people are in Israel? Hundreds of thousands, couple of million? I'm not sure. Not that many.
Millions, yeah.
So he's got to balance all that up. And, you know, he's squashing down on this evil now. The evil has come from these extremist Islamic groups, mm-hmm. and he's done such a success last week, cutting off the head of the snake.
But where does it end? Where does this end, do you think?
Oh, I know where. Well, this, in Judah Samaria, yeah, I think before I was, I didn't, before I knew the history, I thought, well, you know, they shouldn't be in occupied land, but it's not occupied land, it's Jewish land. And you call them settlers, I call them resettlers, you know?
Well, this is the heart of the conflict, isn't it? Who had the land first? Who's got the... both peoples, the Jewish people and the Palestinian people, both have very, very legitimate claims to that land, which is why a two-state solution, for me, is the only long-term answer to that.
But they didn't want one. But when they had the chances to have one, they didn't want one.
Fine, but can we agree that going forward, a two-state solution is the best solution to that?
No, I don't think so. Because they never had the land anyway. They were Bedouin Arabs, the Palestinians. But Bedouin Arabs.
They lived there for a very long time.
So they came from the Aegean originally.
Yes,
around the Aegean.
But lots of people came there originally.
Yes, true.
Lots of people came to a lot of places originally. I think you have to deal with the situation as it is now. And as I say, my view is that both of those people have very legitimate claims to that land. But I don't want to get too bogged down into the sort of this intractable question of how we solve the Israel-Palestinian conflict.
I've got the answer.
Oh, go on then, go on. You got the answer to that question?
Yes, the Palestinians need to get out of Israel. And they can go to a land that... Because they're Bedouin Arabs, they used to...
But they've lived there, that's where they lived for centuries.
They should go to Ireland because they've got so much sympathy for them over there.
Oh, John, don't be... Let's not be facetious about this. Of course the Palestinian people are not all going to move en masse to Ireland.
Well, they've got untold sympathy.
Why should they leave the land that they've lived in for centuries?
Because they don't want to share it with their neighbours.
But a lot of them do. Oh, John, I'm going to leave it there because that's just not true. There are many, many, many Israeli Arabs living within the borders and the confines of the state of Israel under equality within the state of Israel. I'm not talking about the occupied territories here, and doing so peacefully and happily with their neighbours. So the idea that they don't want to, when that's exactly what they're doing, I'm afraid, is just not true. They've got every right to that land, as I think of the Jewish people. John, thanks for the call. Let's go to Mark in Acton. Mark, do you worry as well about where this ends? Or do you think actually Israel's within its rights to try and take down Hezbollah and we just have to sort of take it a week at a time, as silly as that may sound?
I think it was wrong for Israel to do all the things that they did. They committed the genocide, war crimes. The response to the 7th of October atrocities by Hamas was highly disproportionate. It was like a mad revenge.
In Gaza, you mean?
Yes, desire for...
Well, I've been quite critical of what they're doing in Gaza, but I'm not critical at the moment of what they're doing in Lebanon.
They're going to do the same in Lebanon.
How do you know?
Well, wait and see, I'm telling you.
What do you think they're going to do in Lebanon?
Well, if a ground offensive starts, mm-hmm. they slaughter everything on their way.
But they haven't done that already, have they? These strikes against Hezbollah, from what I can see, have been incredibly targeted and precise.
Yeah, but they haven't got the right to attack Hezbollah in the first place.
What do you mean they haven't got the right? Why haven't they got the right to attack a prescribed terror group that's firing thousands of rockets at their civilians?
That's what you say, because you are one of them.
I'm one of what, Mark?
Of Israelis, of Jewish people.
I'm not Israeli. And I'm stating a fact. Hezbollah in this country is a prescribed terror group.
Well, it is in this country, not in the world. This country doesn't mean anything. This country is not the whole of the world.
Right, so whose word on Hezbollah would you take?
Listen, Israel has taken...
No, Mark. No, don't pivot away. Don't do the change the subject
and
thing.
And Arabic land.
Don't change the subject thing.
Game, sir.
If it's not Western governments...
Israel has taken Palestinian land.
Would you answer...
And until they return that...
Mark, will you answer that question, or are you just going to go off on a rant? You're going to go off on a rant. We'll leave that there. Mark, thanks very much indeed. Let's talk to Tony in Westminster. Tony, good evening.
Evening. Hi, Tom.
It's Ben.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you very loud and clear, but it's Ben, not Tom.
Hello?
Ah, Tony, we'll get you back on a slightly better line. Let's read some of the texts that are coming in. Lots and lots of those coming in, indeed. It's glaringly obvious. If people stopped attacking Israel and left it in peace, there would be no war, no violence, and a new Gaza. The terrorists want Israel dead. That comes in from Anne in St Albans. John has no idea about the political side of this, says Valerie. And Daniel says, killing tens of thousands of civilians is justified. How can that be justified? The media put more value on an Israeli life than a Muslim. This war will never be solved without solving the root cause, and that is Israel's conduct in the region. Daniel, there's a four-letter... Don't get the wrong end of the stick. There's a four-letter word that I want to put to you. No, it's not offensive. Iran. Iran. You think the root cause of this is Israel's conduct? Why do you let the Islamo-fascist regime in Tehran off the hook? Because if you don't think that they are responsible in any way for fomenting the divisions and the tensions and the violence that we're seeing unfold right now in the Middle East, then I honestly, Daniel, with respect, I have no idea what planet you're on. If you don't think them arming their proxies, Hezbollah, the Houthis, Hamas, clearly and consistently attacking Israel and Israeli civilians, giving the go-ahead or orchestrating the 7th of October, if you don't think any of that was part of the problem that we're now experiencing, then really, what do you think of Iran? And what do you think of Israel's right to self-defence? Because clearly, the answer to that question is not much. Lots more of your calls on this to come. Plus,
we are mostly fearful that there will be a clash, and that clash might lead to further escalation, further bombing. So that is where we are putting all our efforts now.
That's the Lebanese Economy and Trade Minister, Amin Salam. In a moment, we'll speak to the former Director of Defence Diplomacy at the British Ministry of Defence to get his take on whether Israel is going to be able to achieve what it seems intent on trying to do, namely invading Lebanon. Is that going to have the desired effect? More on that to come. News headlines first, 10:31 the time. Here's Tim Daly.
Israel's military has issued evacuation orders for several parts of South Beirut after reports of heavy artillery in the border areas between Lebanon and Israel tonight. But one of its spokespersons has failed to confirm or deny any incursion into its northern neighbor. In Washington, a State Department spokesman says it was informed by Israel of imminent raids. He's described them as limited operations focused on Hezbollah infrastructure near the border. And the driver of a lorry has survived after his vehicle fell 60 metres from the Thelwall Viaduct on the M6 in Cheshire. It happened just before 7 o'clock this evening. Drivers are being urged to avoid the area. LBC weather staying wet and windy for the east of England overnight, but drier and clearer for the rest of the country with a low of 3 degrees.
LBC, Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Heavy fire on the Lebanon border ahead of Israel's reportedly imminent ground incursion. Nick will have the latest from the region and take your calls. Plus, with the Conservative Party conference underway, leadership contenders Tom Tugendhat and James Cleverly join Nick for a grilling. And a big day for London's air ambulance charity as two new helicopters come into service. Nick will have a full report. All that and more coming up with Nick Ferrari at breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 o'clock here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on your radio and on Global Player. LBC.
You don't need an office. You need an office. You don't need a shop. You need a shop. You don't need contractors. You need contractors. What your business doesn't need one month, it might need the next. That's why with O2 Business, you get automatic data rollover, so your business can flex as you need it to, giving you more business can do. Search O2 Business.
New or upgrading customers only on selected tariffs. 1 month rollover. Terms apply.
When you run a small business, a handshake means a lot. They can be a greeting, an agreement, or a nice to see you. And whether they last too long or not long enough, they mean you're meeting with a Bob, not a bot. Some might be bone crushing, others might be soft. However the handshake, at Metro Bank, we're always pleased to meet with you. Pop in and meet your local business manager. Metro Bank, business to business, face to face. Metro Bank is authorised and regulated by the FCA and PRA.
You've arrived, your dream holiday. You got there for less thanks to comparing flight prices on Kayak. An idyllic local restaurant nestled in the cliffs. A peaceful pool with your own private sunbed. This is the life. All you have to do is act.
actually book it. Don't holidays. Use Kayak to compare flight prices from hundreds of travel sites and bag a great deal. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it. Run with it. Past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new. Because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
10:34, this comes in from Stefan on WhatsApp, and this sort of gets the heart of it for me. Listen to this. Here's Stefan. When Lamy and Starmer ask Israel to be restrained to allow diplomacy with terrorists, would they have asked the US to be restrained and allowed diplomacy to work with bin Laden? I don't think so. These Western appeasers, says Stefan, are asking Israel to do what they would never do were they to be in the same position. Appeasers, and I think restraint is one thing, Stefan. I think it's fine to call for restraint. But frankly, you're right, to be honest. When Britain came under threat from ISIS, when the US came under threat from ISIS and Al-Qaeda, we went to war. We went to war with the explicit and sole purpose of trying to remove the ability of those two terror organisations to terrorise and murder our civilians. And we did it with the backing of, you know, quite a lot of the Western world. Now Israel's trying to do, it seems to me, precisely that in relation to Hezbollah, and the US and the UK, or UK in particular, are telling it can't, that it needs to negotiate with these people. We didn't negotiate with ISIS. We didn't sit down for peace talks with bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, did we? We went to war. And by the way, we killed in staggering and sickening numbers of civilians in the name of doing so. And now when it's a different country, in a different part of the world, another ally of ours, we're telling them they shouldn't. Is that the right approach? Tony's in Westminster. Tony, I think we've got you back on a better line. Hi.
Hi there, Ben. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. Thank you. I hope you are.
I am well. I'm obviously perturbed and everything with regards to what's going on. I wanted to sort of make a broader point here, and hopefully I would say more meaningful, not more meaningful, but just on this topic of, because most recently we're in this sort of zone of, oh my God, Israel has been able to indeed kill, you know, these Hezbollah terrorists, mm-hmm. and they've been able to do it so with such just overwhelming intelligence mm-hmm. and force, etc. And it's very impressive. But the broader context is the fact that they're not doing this for the first time or the second time. They've been able to kill every preceding leader of, indeed, Hezbollah, mm-hmm. And indeed every other Palestinian or other terrorist organization that has come in the preceding decades.
And it hasn't solved the problem.
They haven't solved the problem, yep. Absolutely. Now, what is happening right now? I've seen some quite alarming videos, actually, of massive protests erupting, not just there's days of mourning across entire countries now over this assassination. Lebanon, Iraq, Iran. There's a process through from Turkey all
but,
the way
but Tony,
to
Pakistan. I mean, there were people celebrating on the streets of Syria at the same time. There were people, says that some people celebrating in Lebanon too, because Nasrallah and Hezbollah have got on countless people's deaths on their hands.
Absolutely, I totally agree, because at the end of the day, it is a terrorist organisation, mm-hmm. and there's only one way to deal with, you know, this is just sort of language. I don't even know why there is an indulgence of course, if a state, whether it was, if it was the Lebanese army attacking Israel, why would the IDF not respond to that? Any threat to a state needs to be dealt with. So I don't have...
But is your worry, just reading between the lines of what you're saying, Tony, that they've got the right to do it, but you worry about whether it's actually going to work?
It's never worked. I'll give you two precise examples that I found of this. The founder of Hamas in 1987, he founded Hamas, a guy called Sheikh Yassin, it was. In 1987, he founded Hamas. In 2004, an Israeli helicopter assassinated that founder. By 2006, we know what happened. You know, Hamas had control over, they had governing control.
But Tony, I hear what you're saying, that just taking out the leadership, it's like a steak, it just regrows. I agree with you completely. Is that an argument, because Netanyahu and his supporters would say it was, for doing more, for going into southern Lebanon and pushing it back, pushing Lebanon back beyond this, the Litani River, north of that river, so you basically have this buffer zone between Hezbollah and northern Israel in which they can't fire as many missiles?
Well, let's address that. I think that going into southern Lebanon, the ground invasion, I mean, if the goal here is to protect northern Israel, mm-hmm. it must be done. There's no question about it. You're looking at a same sort of style of infrastructure that the Iranians have helped provide and support for. And it's just on a larger scale as compared to Gaza. But there's no question that the IDF will have to deal with that.
So why is our government urging them not to?
I think what there should be a discussion on, the premise of the question needs to change entirely. If Starmer was to just propose this one-line question to Netanyahu, say, mm-hmm. what's the plan after such and such operation?
He hasn't got one.
Where is the, because there's a hearts and minds battle as well. And that is a very fierce battle. It is literally a battle.
Yep.
And
Israel's lost it, or is losing it. Tony, I'll leave it there just because I want to speak to an expert on this too, but I agree with you. I think I agree with what you're saying, which is Israel has the right to do this. It doesn't mean it's necessarily a great idea, and whether it is a great idea, it really depends on what Israel is hoping to achieve. Because, okay, you push Hezbollah back in a few weeks' time, then what? You have to stay there permanently to make sure it doesn't come back? What's the strategy? And the reason for me that's such an important question is because I'm very, very suspicious of the current Israeli government and the Prime Minister in particular, and whether he's genuinely acting in Israel's best interests or, frankly, as has so often happened before, in his own. So I think you're spot on. We need to know, or at least the UK and the US need to know, in a way they currently don't seem to, what the plan is. Because only then can you judge whether this apparent incursion is going to achieve anything at all or just make the situation worse. Tony, great call. Thanks very much indeed. That was Tony in Westminster. More of your calls to come in a moment. Let's talk first to someone who understands very well the military element of all this. I'm joined by Brigadier John Deverell, former Director of Defence Diplomacy at the Ministry of Defence and a former British officer in the Palestinian territories. John, thank you very much for coming to the programme tonight. It seems, as we speak tonight, that a ground invasion of Lebanon by Israel is very likely. Do you agree that one is imminent?
I'd be surprised it didn't happen, Ben, quite frankly. I think from a military point of view, and I'm sure Netanyahu would have been advised by some of his senior generals at least, the objectives are very difficult to achieve. Mm. If he goes into South Lebanon and does an incursion or series of incursions or some sort of invasion, then, of course, Hezbollah can continue to fire rockets from further north anyway. And so he, having vowed to get people back to their homes in northern Israel, that may be very difficult to achieve. The danger is, militarily, I would think, that he will, in that situation, push further into Lebanon, as happened in 1982, effectively mission creep. And that will lead, as it did before, to increasing numbers of Israeli soldiers being killed. I mean, looking at the map, and I know the country well, having worked in Lebanon, the further north he goes towards the Litani River, the country is extremely difficult, and it's not good open tank country, and the Israelis will take casualties. And so, of course, they'll be tempted, therefore, politically, to go further north, and the military will pay the cost, and Hezbollah can continue to fire rockets.
So what you're saying is that however legitimate the sort of the aspiration of destroying Hezbollah's capacity to terrorise Israeli civilians, this is not going to, or is unlikely to deliver that result.
Exactly, and it won't go well for the Israelis the further north they push militarily, because they've been there before, and the Israeli military at senior level knows that, because they would have been there themselves, some of them in 2006 and even in 1982. Memories are long from that point of view. Mm. So in a sense, Netanyahu is potentially in a trap of his own making regarding his vow to get people back to their homes in northern Israel. If he doesn't do much of an incursion, it won't make a huge difference. And if he does keep pushing on, in a sense, mission creep, Hezbollah, who's been preparing for this for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. will continue to be able to fire rockets, long-range rockets, from much further north anyway.
And in terms of the prospect of this escalating into a full-blown regional war with the direct rather than the indirect involvement of Iran, how big a risk is that? How big a risk are we facing of that tonight?
Well, of course, Ben, the reason why Iran uses proxies is to avoid getting drawn in directly mm-hmm. itself. So Iran will try to avoid that. The barrage that Iran fired back in April, really it had no choice but to do that, and it telegraphed in advance effectively what it was going to do. So I would think Iran will do everything it can to avoid being pulled in, absent, of course, a direct strike by the Israelis on Iran, which would make it very difficult for Iran to stay out altogether.
And those that say that this is inevitable, that Iran for years now, for decades in fact, has been destabilizing the region, has been through Hamas and Hezbollah, clearly posing itself to be a threat to the existence of the State of Israel and its people, that this has come to a head inevitably, and in fact in a way that perhaps needs to happen for longer term peace and stability. What do you say to that argument?
I don't see it at all that way, Ben. Quite frankly, if one looks at Gaza over the last year, again, looking at Netanyahu's objectives, he set himself an impossible task. Destruction of Hamas, exactly like destruction of Hezbollah, is simply not possible. They're far more than just a bunch of terrorists. It's a whole movement. It's an ethos. The difficulties he's faced in Gaza are of his own making. It didn't need to be like this. Now, of course, one could argue that this is all prompted by the ghastly events, the horrible events of October the 7th. But he, Netanyahu, had a choice as to how he was going to respond. I think the concern is that he is in hock to an extremely right-wing government. For him, the survival of that government and him and his own survival politically is extremely important, the paramount thing. And so what could stop all this at a stroke, Ben, would be a ceasefire in Gaza, because it would take away the casus belli from Hezbollah and also from the Houthis as well. But I can't see that happening because, of course, his own right-wingers won't allow it. Mm. So the only huge pressure from the Americans in terms of stopping weapons would actually bring things to a halt. That has happened before, if one goes back to 1982, going back to the Israelis being mired in South Lebanon. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible, but leading up to American election, I can't see it happening. So therefore, we're going to continue to with this ghastly war in Gaza, which won't achieve the objectives that Netanyahu wants to achieve. And therefore, Hezbollah will continue doing what it's doing as well.
Thanks very much for coming on. That's Brigadier John Deverell, former Director of Defence Diplomacy at the Ministry of Defence and a senior British officer in the Palestinian territories. In a moment, more of your calls on whether you support what Israel is doing and would like to see the British government be more supportive of it rather than demanding a ceasefire, or quite the opposite perhaps. And we'll have a look at tomorrow's newspaper front pages. And Katie Shea with you on LBC, 10:47.
LBC This Morning on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Kemi Badenoch sparking a furious row yesterday for suggesting that statutory maternity pay is excessive. Lisa's in Rochester. Is that right? You're on maternity leave now, Lisa?
Yes, yes,
oh, congratulations.
I am.
How long ago did you have the baby?
Just under 4 months. He's 4 months tomorrow. So I think the point that people tend to kind of forget when they're talking about maternity pay and mums kind of getting caught 3 months is we're literally creating the workforce that's going to be working in the next 20 to 30 years. So mums may now make a decision that, look, I can't afford to go on maternity pay or go on maternity leave. I can't afford to have children, which I think a lot of people are doing.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast, back tomorrow morning from 7.
With Betfair, where odds move faster than polls. Play responsibly.
LBC. The US election, explained on LBC.
With Betfair, play responsibly.
I'm John Sopel, host of the Global Original Newsagents USA podcast. The two political parties that dominate this and every presidential election since 1852 and the Democrats and the Republicans. The Democrats, the Blue Party, are typically slightly left-leaning and in favour of more liberal and progressive policies. The Republicans, the Red Party, are usually on the right. They prefer smaller government and more traditional values. You'll also hear them named the GOP, the Grand Old Party. The two major issues dominating US politics, aside from the economy, are abortion and immigration, with both parties fundamentally disagreeing with each other.
The US election, explained on LBC.
With Betfair, everyone knows the polls, experts know the odds. Play responsibly.
LBC.
Curtains drawn at dawn. You wake, and so does your potential. You don't let it snooze or sit around. You act on it, run with it, past the safety of routine and familiarity to somewhere new, because anything is possible if you choose to make it happen.
Whether you're growing your business, switching careers, or just starting out, make the most of your potential. It all starts with skills. Search Skills for Life.
We've all been there. MOT's coming up. Your car's making a noise or two. And you think if you just turn your music up just a little louder each time, you'll be fine. But that's not you, is it? You know you can get your car in check with parts that will fit right. All you need to do is enter your reg on eBay. Find brake lights, filters, windscreen wipers and more, and get your car MOT ready. Find the right part at the right price with eBay.
Does your printer need ink?
In a hurry?
Just think.
CartridgePeople.com.
For unbeatable prices, Cartridge People.
Printing?
Sorted. See online for our price promise.
All the big names are here. Ooh, who is that?
I think she was in the movie about that really big shark.
No, not her. The florist.
Oh, she's automating invoices on the go so she can spend more time on that flower wall.
QuickBooks can save you up to 8 hours a week so you could bring your vision to life. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Text 84850.
10:51 the time. Talk to Jason and Marlowe, Daniel and Wilson in just a moment. Let's first have a quick look at what's dominating tomorrow's newspaper front pages, which, believe it or not, in many cases is leading not with the imminent war in the Middle East, but with the strictly bullying row. The BBC apologising to actress Amanda Abington over the conduct of dancer Giovanni Pernice when she appeared on Strictly after a review found the dancer had belittled, swore and made a lewd remark towards Amanda Abington. That's the story on the front page of the Mirror. Strictly the verdict, their headline. So to the Daily Express, BBC apology to Amanda in Strictly bullying row. And the Sun, I've won Amanda's joy at BBC apology, and now she'll sue, according to the Sun. The I newspaper has a story about the Post Office. Post Office second IT scandal linked to wrongful convictions. Another IT system is likely to have been faulty, according to the I. Elsewhere, perhaps unsurprisingly, I would say a bigger story than Strictly Come Dancing, the imminent war in the Middle East. Netanyahu warns Iran, you're in our sights, says the Daily Telegraph. The Guardian leads with Israel has begun ground attacks on Hezbollah inside Lebanon, says the US. The Daily Mail puts it succinctly, world holds breath as Israel set to invade Lebanon. And lastly, the Financial Times. Israel's forces poised for imminent ground assault in Lebanon, says US. 10:50 to the time. Worth pointing out, isn't it? A imminent ground assault doesn't necessarily mean a full-scale invasion. It could be a series of special forces raids. We don't know what is about to unfold. But either way, it's going to be a momentous and quite possibly historic moment in the long, troubled and checkered history of that part of the world. Let's talk to Jason about whether Israel would be within its rights to go into Lebanon to try to dismantle Hezbollah, and whether our government should be imposing it, as it currently is, or actively supporting it. Jason Marlebon, hi.
Good evening, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay, thank you. Your thoughts on this, Jason?
I mean, your first question, should Israel be doing or do they have the right to do it? I would say 100% for their citizens, they absolutely have the right to do it. I find it really, the reason I call tonight is because I find it very upsetting that we live in the UK and then you'll get people call up the station and they will turn around and tell you, they'll go on about the history and about Palestinians' land, Jewish people's land, and they just completely don't think that Israel have the right to defend itself. And it sort of tells me, what does it actually say about the state of this country when people actually can't see that Israel has the right to defend itself? I don't know what the end game is, and that's a completely another... It's such a difficult question to answer, and I don't think anybody could come on this show.
But I, Jason, I don't think it is a set. You're sort of going to say that I think it's a separate issue. For me, it's not. Because even if Israel has the right to go into Lebanon and try to, you know, basically continue its attacks on Hezbollah from the ground rather than just from the air, that doesn't mean it's a good idea.
I understand what you're saying, but when I went back, if you go back to what I said before about it, they have to kind of do something for their citizens. And if you're at home tonight and there's a threat of God knows how many missiles are going to come into your area, and our government are sitting back and doing absolutely nothing, how do we feel about that?
But it depends if what they're actually doing is going to work. Doing something for the sake of doing something, because it's better than doing nothing, seems to me to be a pretty terrible reason to do it.
Well, but what they've done so far has seemed to be, I think, in my eyes, pretty quite incredible. They seem to be taking out the leaders and they seem to be just stopping their communication. So whatever their next plan is, we're not going to know about that until we actually see what they're doing. And I would say that there is a plan. It definitely feels like there's a plan from the way it started with breaking their communication. And that was genius, really.
I mean, what they've done so far is very impressive, whatever you think of the sort of morality of it, the way that they've clearly added incredible intelligence about where all these people were, where the weapons were and so on. It's about the end game, though, isn't it? You take out Hezbollah's leadership, OK, I think few of us personally, I don't have an issue with that at all. And you saw celebrations, indeed, across part of the Arab world. But what's the end game? What is it they're trying to actually achieve? And that's the question, Jason, as you say, we don't know the answer. But to me, it's a pretty fundamental one. Perhaps the people will be more supportive, perhaps our government would be more supportive if they were a bit more upfront about what it is they're trying to do. Thanks, Jason. Good to have you on. Let's talk to Daniel in Willesden tonight. Hi, Daniel.
Hello, Ben. I just wanted to say that I think although Israel are definitely entitled to do so, because any country, as the previous caller said, who wasn't looking to take some form of action against the hostile force, be that a state or non-state actor that was throwing missiles at your country, the government would probably be voted out within the next term, even though this government's going to get voted out anyway. But I don't think Israel should invade them. And the main reason I think that is because, just like with the October the 7th attacks, this seems to be almost set up for Israel to fail. No matter what they do, they could win the war, but they can never win the argument. Mm. And part of that is because they are becoming, they're acting in a way that they're being portrayed. And what is, a caller you had earlier on, I wish you hadn't have cut him off because he wanted to explain himself. And I think you need to question, I see you do it very well, but more slightly on this one issue of when these people say they're invaders, they are occupiers, mm-hmm. etc., what do you want the borders to be? What would you like?
Well, I think it should be the 1960s.
They wish Israel would never be. Not you.
Oh, sorry, you asked them. Daniel, I tried. I only cut. I think it was Mark, wasn't it? I only cut him off because I was trying to ask him exactly those sorts of questions. And as happens, I've got to say quite often on this topic, there are some people that just don't want to discuss and engage in debate. And I'll talk to anyone, whatever their view. I'll discuss it. I might disagree with it passionately, but I want to hear it. But when people just want to come on and shout and rant and ignore questions and divert, then we can't have a conversation. That's why I cut him off. Thanks for your call, Daniel. I want to leave it there just so I can squeeze in Khalid in Leicester before we move on. Hi, Khalid.
Hi, Ben. Yeah,
what's on your mind?
I mean, look, the end game should be 1967 borders. When I say end game, meaning that without all the killings. I mean, right now, I mean, even as far as just a couple of days from after the 7th of October, 9th of October, I mean, I forgot his name now, Chaim Rubenstein, the spokesman for the hostages, for example, he stated himself, I mean, he was almost pulling his hair up because he knew that he found out afterwards that there was a deal where the Palestinians in there made a deal that we want an exchange of hostages if you don't invade Gaza, but Netanyahu refused. So Haim Rubinstein was saying that was appalling. They wouldn't have to go this far.
But just because of press time, you're right. A lot of the hostage families, of course, have been very critical of their own government for, in their view, not doing enough to bring the hostages home. And I can fully understand why they think that. Can I just bring you to Lebanon and the current situation there?
Yeah.
Israel seemingly on the verge of invading that country, not to go to war with the Lebanese people or the Lebanese state, but of course to try and go to war with Hezbollah and sort of try to reduce the risk that that organisation poses. A lot of people this hour, Khalid, saying that's understandable and legitimate. What say you?
Not a chance. The defence minister, as well as the education minister in Israel, have stated, and I quote, that there is no difference between Hezbollah and Lebanon. We are going to annihilate Lebanon. These are their words, and I end quote. This is what they said themselves. Right, so basically, they may state to the public, especially to the British media, when they talk in English, they say, yeah, we want to go after Hezbollah, etc. But they have a bigger plan. They've also colonized, I mean, Gaza has been taken over, West Bank has been taken over. Now they want parts of Lebanon. They're in Syria already, parts of Syria as well. So they want to colonize even greater Israel.
Do you genuinely think that he wants to expand Israel into Lebanon?
He's shown that map of Greater Israel, Ben.
It didn't include Lebanon, Khalid.
Yeah, but he probably wants part of Lebanon as a buffer zone. Sorry?
What's your basis? Israel has invaded Lebanon before, and then it withdrew. So your idea that it wants to seize its territory permanently, I mean, it's baseless.
Even 1978 they did it, before even Hezbollah. Even Hezbollah was created after
in
the
this
invasion.
Century they've invaded Lebanon. So why did they, if what you're saying is true, why did they then retreat? Why didn't they just keep that territory?
Yeah, well, they probably had too many losses. But
that's not their aim. More likely.
No, but whether it's their aim or not, Ben, the point is they're probably creating a bigger buffer zone for Israel. Basically, that's what it is. In fact, we can't disregard the fact they've killed tens of thousands of people in Gaza.
But no one's disregarding that, Khaled. I'm talking about why they're going to Lebanon. You keep saying they're probably this, they're probably that. But as far as I can see, that's total conjecture. I don't think for a moment that Israel wants to occupy the entirety of Lebanon. I don't think, frankly, they even want to occupy an inch of it in Lebanon permanently. They just want to push back or ideally dismantle the terror group that is stopping tens of thousands of their citizens and civilians returning to their homes, and meaning they're constantly living under aerial bombardment. Khaled, thank you for the call. Got to leave it there because we're moving on. That was Khaled in Leicester. Coming up the other side of the news, I'm going to return to UK politics. Kemi Badenoch today saying it's time to accept that not all cultures are valid and we need to be far more picky about which ones we choose to let into this country via immigrants coming to live here. Is she right? Or does that sound to you like nothing more than dog whistle racism? That's what she's been accused of. What say you? Talk more about that after the news.
On your radio, on Global Player, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the UK government has chartered a commercial flight